Jonathan, hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.
Kyle.
Hello to this. I can't hear the clicks. Forget it. Welcome to this week's episode of Bagel Tech Photo.
Oh, Christ, we're slick.
See, this is what it's like. You're off for a week, and then you can't hear the clicks anymore.
No. Oh, well.
Oh, boy. Oh, well. This is how pro we are. Welcome to this week's episode of Bagel Tech Photo. I'm Kyle Swinger. Happy to be back from the beach. And with me, as always, the two fine gentlemen that we have every week for you on the show, Mr. Ewan Rankin and Alex Fox. We'll start with Ewan, the guy I was supposed to be hearing the clicks from, but he's even going to blow me a kiss, but you didn't.
We need to find a way of queuing you up, mate. That's the key part of this. There's got to be a way for giving you a little nudge somehow. I don't know.
A nudge. Across the side of the world.
There's got to be we'll have to time it, so start a stopwatch or something. We'll get it sorted. How you doing?
We'll get it sorted. I'm good. Week for you.
You didn't get many pictures. I thought there'd be loads of pictures up on the Flickr group now.
You know, I see the Flickr group, just in case anybody doesn't know about, we do have a Bagel Tech Photo Flickr group now. So you want to go check that out. And I've been posting pictures. Ewan's been posting pictures. Alex has been posting pictures, as well as other people that are are listening to the show have been posting pictures there. I love the one, Ewan, of all of you, because I know every single person in that photo.
Yeah, best friends.
Yeah. I love that picture.
You must
share the secrets of how you did that.
Well, actually, that photo took me about 3 hours to do, and the Photoshop bit of it was only about 20 minutes cutting things out. The bigger part was getting changed. It took me 2 hours just to get changed.
See, I figured it'd be Photoshop.
No,
so you're saying that most of it was done, you just put a stationary camera there, and then you went... kind of change, go back.
Yeah, photo. If you look in the if you look in the pictures on the wall behind, you can just see the tripod on one of the frames, and it's a tripod sat on three stools high up with a big wide angle lens on there, and then I just set it on a time trigger, and then when I set it, I ran back to where I was going to sit and struck a pose, and that was it. There's actually only 4 tins of beer. In the whole, that's all I had in the fridge was 4 tins of beer, but there's 20 in the picture. It's just spreading them around and taking different pictures each time.
Yeah, that's how you get more beer. Take more pictures of it.
Exactly. Beer tins.
And with us, as always, Alex G. Fox. Alex, you going to do any photos like that of yourself with all your multiple personalities?
Yeah, it's not enough room in the picture for my personality. It'd have to be a crowd shot at a football ground.
You've gone quiet, Alex.
Yeah, Alex, you're very, very distant. Are you watching the royal wedding?
Me? No, I'm there.
Oh, you're there.
Yeah, in mind. I always like a good wedding.
Oh, I thought
it was cheaper than going to a boxing match.
Cell phone transmissions and all that. So how are we beaming you in on the photo show today?
iPhone 4.
Oh, so they can't block
that.
It's
a new app.
It's an app.
How's your week been, Alex?
It's been okay. I've been trying to get some cameras repaired and fixed in time to do various jobs and various things, and I got through the week the best I possibly could, and no one's complained. So I now have a table full of cameras that most of them work again, so roll on next week.
Well, and besides, complaining never gets you anywhere anyway, so never does any good. As much as you want to do it. Just,
there is a distinct shortage of, top-end cameras, and there's also a distinct shortage of spares for cameras. So I have been running around trying to find various bits I've never heard of before.
There's a distinct shortage of employees at Panasonic as well.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, they laid off, how many thousands? 17,000 or something?
Yeah. Horrific.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to be. The electronics industry is not a good place to be at the moment.
Doesn't seem that way, anyways. That's for sure. Shall we get into what tiny bit of news there has been creeping around the corners this week for photo news?
Right. Please do.
The thing that I'm most excited about, probably because I've been taking pictures of the iPhone all week and sticking them up on Flickr with our photo group account now, is the Leica i9 concept camera. I've seen this come out. They're saying that it pairs with like a $1,000 camera with a $200 iPhone for this thing. Can this thing actually... Do you see this thing coming out? Either one of you?
No.
No.
Okay. Thanks for dashing all my hopes.
No, the idea is lovely. The actual sort of idea I like, I was looking at it and I was thinking, well, forget the fact that it takes an iPhone 4, because as good as an iPhone 4 is as a camera, you know, it's still not as good as a compact camera. So, you know, you're using a part of the iPhone 4, it's pointless. You might as well stick a decent sensor in this thing for less than, they say, $200. I'm not sure where you get an iPhone 4 for $200, but I would suggest, but the idea of being able to snap in different electronics into that system, that sort of appeals to me. If you look at the iPhone 4 and say, okay, we'll call that a sensor unit with various different, you know, bits and pieces on it, the idea of being able to snap that into something with a Leica lens and a Leica build, that appeals to me. So part of the idea I actually quite like. I don't know what Aaron thinks.
I think in this, the devil's in the detail, definitely. And as a concept, there is no detail. That's the trouble. Someone's got this idea of bastardizing these two items together, making some Frankensteinian camera, but no one's actually talking about the integration process in all the stories that I looked at. It's just a visual. Now,
it is, yeah.
The one thing that struck me was, if you look at the picture that they've got, the iPhone is seated inside the camera. Now, it's got a curved bottom to the iPhone. So where you've got the iPhone showing here on the screen, on the image, it actually comes around and curves around the bottom end of the camera. Now, what that means is that you've obviously opened some kind of door, bedded the iPhone in and closed the door again. Now, that's going to start suggesting that there's an electronic integration. So you've actually docked it with the thing rather than this being just a snap-on lens. So this could be doing a hell of a lot, but there's no details. So do you want me to part with £1,000 based on what I can see here as a concept? Stick it. Not interested. Yeah. But there's some more detail on this, and if it can do the things that you think it might be able to do because of the electronic integration, I wouldn't buy it, I don't think, because it's just too expensive. But I'd certainly look at it with more, get more kudos for trying to take it to the next step. And then if you've got this process where that door suddenly becomes able to take a BlackBerry, an Nexus S, you know, a Sony Xperia, those kind of things, that really is special then, potentially.
What we're kind of looking at here, do you think it's software? It's, in other words, it's going to be an app for the phone. You dock the phone in the camera, and then you sort of, shall we say, launch the Leica app.
Maybe.
And that allows you to do the processing of the photos and these kind of things. You're not actually using the iPhone camera, maybe, in this thing.
Yeah, but Leica are hardware.
No, but I mean, all you're suggesting there, Ewan, it's a dock tethering system as opposed to a wireless one.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is a point of usefulness between integrating your iPhone or any Wi-Fi device with, you know, it's got abilities to do some onboard processing with a higher end sensor with a higher end piece of glass on the front of it. So, you know, the idea, I think I don't think this concept is going to go anywhere, but the idea of being able to link the iPhone more carefully with another piece of hardware might be an interesting way to look forward. See what happens.
See, at the moment, if you dock the iPhone with hardware, what you've got is lens additions that still use the sensor on the iPhone. Now, if what we're talking about here is the iPhone is then just becoming a large SD card, because you're docking it and all you're doing is writing files off a Leica sensor and Leica lens, then I'm not sure I see the point. If all it is, all it means is that you've then got a much larger 3.8 screen to edit on, and then you can take the photo that you've just taken immediately and then start editing it with the Photoshop applications or with a Leica application. You know, there's so many ways that this could go, and some of them would really make me quite interested. But as a concept, I think the problem that you're going to have is people like Panasonic are now going to look at this and say, oh, And then you're going to get a Lumix range comes out where you dock your phone to it. And they're just going to think of, well, should we do it as an SD card? Should we do it as an edited function? You know, is there an app that we can generate for it? I think all they've done here is open up the market to others, because no one's going to buy this at a grand.
No, but it's, you've got things like geotagging and things which you could obviously stick on as a standard. Off, yeah. But you could do that with a Wi-Fi card. So,
I think at $1,000, no. If this thing was $500 and it can take a mediocre camera right now, that's a compact camera, and boost it to a pro level because of effects, because of apps, because of essentially using the phone as a processor, then I'd be very interested in this thing. And I think you could get a lot of consumers also interested in this thing.
Yeah, but be careful though, mate, because what you've got two things that you're saying there. If this is just a lens on the front that's going to integrate with the existing iPhone sensor, which it, I'm sure it isn't, then it's not worth $500. If you're saying that there's a sensor in here, and then all you're doing is using the iPhone as an editing tool on top with a GPS locator and geotagging and that kind of stuff, I'm still not sure it's worth that. This thing's got to do something else. As Alex said,
I don't think it's going to be that. I think it's, honestly, I think it's going to use the camera as a sensor. I think the iPhone sensor, Leica should know this, that there's no way they're going to use that sensor. Well, I think the phone is going to be used the processing power for it. I think it's, you're either going to have a way to edit photos, to do real-time effects, to do, you know, everything that you could do with the little camera apps that we have now, but in a much better pro or scale. That's the way I see this going.
Well, the only thing you've got with that is that the lens doesn't line up with the lens on the iPhone, and that's the only way to write to the sensor.
Unless it's docked. Maybe there's a way to integrate it through the dock.
You'd still need to capture to a sensor optically. So
there'd be no point to it, though.
Be no point, then.
No, I mean, why would you want to send what goes through one lens into another sensor unless they were directly, you know, optically linked? If you're going to do it, then you could put a fairly cheap sensor into a Leica camera and it would be a lot better than an iPhone 4.
Leica already do put fairly cheap sensors into Leica cameras and overcharge for them.
Aren't they made by Panasonic?
Probably.
So you think that they're actually taking the sensor here and going... And they're also using the iPhone sensor?
No.
Well, no, I don't think so either.
No, but what you're talking about is them writing from the... You're talking about them capturing with the Leica lens to the iPhone sensor.
Right. No. I'm talking about capturing with the Leica lens through using the iPhone as a processor. I mean, digital cameras have a processor. They have an operating system, just like any other thing else. So you're writing to that device. In a sense, wouldn't this be capturing it with the lens?
No, you'd be writing. All you'd be doing then is that the iPhone would be a storage device at that point. It can't do any processing of the raw data gathered by the Leica sensor other than just store it and then edit it.
Yeah, I mean, you could send it as a raw file and then you'd do exactly the same onboard processing as you would on any other device. So, I mean, but for all that, you can do that anyway by just tethering your iPhone or tethering a camera to... When you take a picture out of your camera from your SD card or whatever, if you've put it in RAW file and you put it into your computer, you're then processing the image exactly as you're saying, Kyle. There's no difference whatsoever. Mm. So the point that this iPhone is fitted into the back of the Leica itself is, other than the fact that they could use an Apple docking port rather than doing it Wi-Fi, there is absolutely no point whatsoever.
There's something extra has to come from this. There's got to be something innovative and special that we haven't thought of here. I'd be surprised if there is.
For $1,000, there should be. I think the most incredible thing about it, though, if you really look at the picture, you can actually still answer your phone because there's a cutout hole for the speaker.
You're going to look stupid with a camera to your head.
That's right. It's a dual purpose. You can answer your phone and take a
picture. You could use the lens as a holder for your phone. It'd be a handle, $1,000 handle for your iPhone.
That's all it is. It's like the... I mean, you thought that Apple were overcharging for the rubber band around the outside of your iPhone. You got nothing. I mean, Leica, $1,000 just for an iPhone cover.
I hope it's more than this, because it looks intriguing to me. But you guys would also know better about what cameras are capable
of. There's too many questions. As I say, the devil's in the detail with this. It's got to come out with something that's special, because everything that we've just talked about is doable in other ways at a lot less than $1,000.
I've got to admit, if this came out 29 days ago, I'd have thought it was an April Fool's joke.
Oh,
harsh but fair.
We'll leave it there. Leica will never be a sponsor now. Shall we move on now to Sony's NEX?
If they ever are a sponsor, by the way, we'll overcharge them.
Be funny if this came out, though. It really would. The NEX C3, the Alpha A35 images possibly have been leaked this week. You guys checked out this camera. Actually, I'm looking at a picture over right now over in Engadget.
Yeah, it was an interesting one, isn't it? Because there was all the hoo-ha about the NEX 3 being discontinued very quickly, very quietly. And, you know, there was, well, what's wrong with this camera? Why have you launched something and then a few months later just said, okay, that's the end of that? You know, it's, I don't know how well it sold, but, you know, as for, I don't know what you call these, a bridge camera, is that what they're called? As for a bridge camera, there's nothing wrong with it. But it may be because, you know, they have a successor ready and waiting, which, you know, I sort of hoped, because, it, you know, at the time I was thinking, well, are they not telling us something about the original camera? Does it need a recall, et cetera, et cetera? But, you know, they've got something that is presumably an improvement.
It's Sony's Ford Pinto.
Yes.
It's got an exploding lens on it.
Yeah, there's something wrong about it. But no, I'm pleased to see that, you know, instead of holding on for another year, selling another, you know, container shipload of these old cameras, they've said, okay, well, we've got something better. Let's stop production of the old one and just give the public the better version. I'm actually, you know, I quite like the idea of it.
Obviously, Ewan has to make jokes about it. So, have you ever used a Sony camera, Ewan?
I have not. I have looked through the lens and taken one picture with one, because the girl that used to do the photography at my rugby club had the A55.
Sounds like an auction catalogue, doesn't it?
And it was pleasant to use. I mean, it didn't seem, I didn't get into losing the software that much with it. You know, I just point and shot with it. But it was great, and the lens on the screen on the back was good, and it's a nice enough camera. And the images she used to produce used to be acceptable images. You know, they were nothing horrific. I used to touch a few of them up before they got published on the website and stuff. I just think that Sony's lacked the exposure and the depth, because they're not a camera firm. I know they are a camera firm, but in the perception of the buying public, they're not a camera firm.
Not in my eye, they're not.
Yeah, exactly. So
they're a Sony. Sony is a TV and an audio manufacturer for me.
I love the idea of what Alex is saying as well, as, but the problem is that you don't go to the expense of R&D in a camera for 7 months and then pull it off just because you've R&D'd something that looks a little bit better. The only thing I'll say is that the form factor's not changed particularly. You know, it looks exactly the same. The bodies are the same. So the basic chassis here could well be the same. It could be a very minor electronic change inside, or a sensor upgrade or something like that. And they've just decided, well, you know, why not? If we're going to refresh it, you know, it's only decals then at that point to refresh the entire line.
Well, I have a thought.
Go on.
Now, Sony, much as the same as Kodak, they are predominantly sensor makers. You know, we were talking about the Leica. Now, the very good top-of-the-range Leicas, the sensors are made by Kodak. And a lot of the sensors in the Nikons are made by Sony, etc., etc. Now, the only reason you would possibly carry on a camera is, you know, longer than you need to, if you like, is because of the parts, the main part being the sensor. There is a stock of sensor parts. You know, the company that makes your sensor has already made X amount of sensors. They've made them for you, and you've got to use them up. Well, if Sony, being one of the few companies to put their own sensors in their own cameras, they can quite easily just say, okay, from day 100, we're no longer going to make that sensor. We're going to make our new updated sensor. So for them, there is no point whatsoever continuing with an old sensor when they're the people that produce it in the first place. So they can make exactly the same camera and just put a more up-to-date sensor in without any change to their system cost, purchasing or anything. So, you know, it makes sense to them to use up their old stock. It took 7 months to use it up. Now we're going to just put the new sensor in the, into the same camera and carry on. Because they
I hate the flash bulb at the top, just so you know.
I think it's brilliant.
Really, it reminds me of something from 1968.
That's possibly why I like it.
Whereas
it just doesn't look appealing to me as a... Sony's trying to set out and be a modern manufacturer. They're trying to go after people like Nikon, and maybe they can do it with quality standards. But to me, when they're building a camera like this, it's not visually appealing.
But you've got to remember with these sort of flashes, if you use an onboard flash for most cameras, any onboard flash, the design of them to fit in the camera, et cetera, what it does, it gives you the minimum amount of usability. This flash here, it looks like it's got a tilt mechanism. It looks like it's got a separate bulb, so you can do fill-in flash, you can do a wider flash. This flash is actually more like a flash gun, which has all the abilities of adjustment, which a normal inbuilt flash hasn't. So as far as usability, this is probably far, far more superior, if that makes any good English. This is far more superior than most flashes you'll get with a compact or bridge camera.
I think that the key part, and I agree with Alex, I think that, you know, it looks nice. I don't mind the look of it. It's one of those things. It's all, you know, why would you buy a certain type of car if you didn't like the look of it? That's to be the first appeal. If you don't like it, Kyle, you won't buy it, whereas Alex does, he will. But I think what Sony should be doing is thinking more about concentrating on that interlaced market between the people that are using pure compacts and then the ones that want to think about some interchangeability on lenses. DSLR like functions, but don't want to make the leap to a full DSLR like the A35 or the A55. They should just stick with this bridge market, as Alex calls it, because I think, you know, the people that fancy themselves to get better results than a compact would give them when they're on holiday would be buying this kind of thing, and they would see Sony as a good provider of that because of the mass appeal within the general consumer market. But the problem is, when you get to start selling prosumer to pro level, pros and even, you know, the higher end prosumers aren't looking at Sony as a good manufacturer of cameras. And also, if you think about longevity as well, you know, the fit of lenses, and once you buy the lenses, you're tied in with the lenses. Depending on the spread of what you want, the Sony spread of lenses that are available is poor.
I will give Sony this though. The price point is right. They're suggesting that the new model will be also around the NEX C3 line, which will be around $500. So the price point's good.
For the bridge camera, yeah.
I will give them that.
You know, I'd look through the EFA pad today, and, you know, there's not that many amazing stories. And this actually made me think, because I was thinking, well, how could Sony, you know, get more into the market? And I was thinking, well, what they need to do, they need to bring out other peripherals that their cameras, for instance, integrate with. And it does beg the question, seeing as we have discussed on one of the very early programs, why Apple aren't getting back into the camera market, because of, as we all know, as experts in the field, Apple were one of the first people to produce digital compact-ish digital cameras, and they stopped. And I was just thinking, well, if Sony wanted to get into the market, they need peripherals that attach, work brilliantly with Sony equipment. So it confuses me why, if Apple can produce quite nice cameras on an iPhone, why they don't sort of leap into the market with digital cameras. Because of, you know, we know that if Apple brings something design-wise, it will be good. Probability, usability will be quite high, but the integration with all their other equipment and it having an Apple badge onto it, it's just, I'm a bit surprised that they haven't got into that market again. I don't know what anyone else thinks.
I think Apple have spread themselves too thin already. They're in too many ends of the consumer market. I think they're starting to not do any of them well. You're looking at hardware failures. There's starting to be a, my perception is that there's more hardware failures at the moment.
Oh, there definitely is.
I think they're losing a bit of touch on customer quality and service. I think that's a result of them trying to stay ahead of a market that's rapid behind them, and then also thinking about the fact that they're just across too many different platforms.
Okay. I say we continue that discussion on the Mac Show, Ewan, because that surprises me you say that.
Yeah, I think we should.
Did Apple piss you off this week?
No. It's one of the listeners has written in. I've got an email to read out on the show.
Great.
Their perception is that Apple is perhaps selling itself a little bit short in terms of quality at the moment, and I think I agree.
Interesting.
Well, one of the first conversations myself and Ewan ever had was about the fact that I was incredibly frustrated with what I perceived was the quality of the more popular Apple, etc. were getting, the more problems I was having with the quality of the equipment that I was buying. So but back to the Sony, it was just would Sony be able to get a bigger chunk of the market if they could integrate their electronics with other Sony equipment? Maybe you could have a wireless tethering from a Sony handheld bridge camera with video to your Sony DVR recorder or your Sony television. If they could integrate it all into one big system, I think Sony then could get a leap on a lot of the other manufacturers.
I think
that's the point I was making.
I think the problem is that one of the issues, I've just gone onto Warehouse Express's website to start looking at the choice of lenses for the Sony Fit, and one of the problems that's there is the fact that they have got some very good sharp lenses. They've got a 300mm sports lens, 2.8 f-stop all the way through, 70 to 200 2.8 f-stop all the way through, 70 to 400 4 to 5.6. These are decent sports lenses that are the higher end stuff towards the pro market. The problem is the 70 to 200 mil is nearly exactly the same price as the Canon 70 to 200 mil, and the recognised name for sports photography and for rapid reaction lenses and the USM technology, that stabilisation stuff, all of that is at the Canon end of it, not at the Sony end of it. And no one is going to go into a market where you've got that kind of value of lenses and see it as a real value to them, because even if they saved £100 or £200 on it, if I've got the choice of buying Canon with a lens at £1,800, Sony with a lens at £1,800,
you go with Canon.
Everyone would go with Canon. No one's going to buy Sony.
It all comes back to the name, really, at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly.
And if the price point is the same, then what's the point?
Exactly.
Until quite recently, though, the gap between, say, 24 megapixel ish cameras was, you had Canon and Nikon at sort of between £4,000 and £5,000, and you had Sony at about £2,000. That was a difference until recently, and it's because Sony make their own sensors.
Yeah.
So I know that especially Canon at the moment, they have some higher rated sensors on some less expensive cameras now. But I reckon Sony had a good year where they were the only people in the market with a higher end sensor on a high street priced camera. So in that respect, I'm surprised that Sony didn't get a bigger chunk of the market.
Mm. It's the name.
I agree. Shall we get into some questions? Before I do that, though, did you guys come up with any cool thingy ideas?
No, keep going with the questions. We'll come back to it.
We'll do the questions first, come back to it. You guys are still thinking, aren't you?
Yeah.
Knew it. All right, let's get into the questions then. First question comes from Michael from Buckinghamshire, not Buckingham Palace. Loving the podcast. Thank you very much. I have a question for you guys about weddings. Appropriate for today. My daughter is getting married today, as in the 29th. Is his daughter Kate?
I don't know. I haven't read the question.
Okay, well, anyways, today I have duties as a father of the bride. I'm also a keen photographer and would like to get some more candid shots of the families. There is likely to be quite a large congregation of both sides. This is starting to sound like William and Kate, just so you know. I have extended families, and getting to see everyone will be hard, not to mention that I'm already on a good number of the official images. Does Alex or Ewan have any tips for candid photography and how to catch people while they're at their most relaxed? My daughter's fiance has a nice family, but they can be a little stuffy, and I would love to make sure I get images of them, which are not typical. Boy, I'm telling you guys, is Michael like incognito here or something?
Who wants to read the name out?
Oh, Michael Middleton.
Gotcha,
sucker.
That's what you get for not preparing for Swagger.
Why is it always me? I'm the host. It's supposed to be the other way around.
Well, Michael, I would suggest...
Not on this show. Go ahead, Alex.
I would suggest with hundreds of millions of other people taking pictures, I wouldn't necessarily worry about taking your own camera. I'm sure that one of the newspapers would run you off a couple of prints if you asked them.
Sorry.
Oh, you're funny, man. Why don't you answer Michael's question, Ewan?
Go be a better father than you are a photographer. There you go.
Is there going to be another one later on the Mac show so I can be prepared for it?
Hire someone to do it for you, you cheapskate bastard. There you go.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure the taxpayers will cover it if you ask them.
30 million, you could have afforded an extra person just to take a few snaps.
I would have done it for 10 grand a day.
Yeah, easy.
Oh. Are the next two questions real before I dive into them?
Because you haven't read them either. Yes, they are real questions.
No, I haven't read them before the show. No, I was too busy trying to knock off the heat from my body. This is from Jeff, supposedly from Southampton, supposedly. No, hi, gents. I want to buy a lens. What?
It's real. Carry on.
Yeah. I want to buy a lens to take some pictures of my local football club, probably Manchester United, that my son plays for. I need a decent lens and wonder what Ewan uses for his rugby pictures. Any recommendations? I have a Canon 5D MK2.
Yeah, well, thank Mr. you. Giggs, yeah, Baker. It's...
No, it's a real question. Jeff yes. Buttery in Southampton. The lens I've got is this one. That's what all the rugby pictures are shot with.
And just for you, those on audio right now, yeah. Wonderful lens.
I'm just about to tell them what it is. Hang on. It's a Canon EF 70 to 200 mil 2.8 lens. So the 2.8 means that the f-stop setting, and if I open it up there, you'll see straight away, look, there's a very, very big amount of light going straight through that lens. If you're on the video feed, that's getting a lot of light in very, very quickly. So 2.8 means I'm going to get very shallow depth of field, but I'm going to get very quick images if I've got higher ISO settings. Now, one of the things that that Jeff's asking for is for football. Well, football's played in the winter over here, and the one thing that you really lack is light. And there's been some matches this year where we've got to sort of 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm you know, not even halfway through the second half, and I've had to stop shooting because I've run out of light, even shooting at 800 ISO. So it's important that you get a lens that lets a lot of light in. Now, the only problem that you've got is if you want a 2.8 lens, you've got to pay a lot of money for it. That's a £2,000 lens. You can get cheap lenses, so the Sigma do a 70 to 300 mil lens, which is perfectly fine, but it does f4.5 to f6.3, which again is if you start losing light, you'll lose images very rapidly. You won't get decent results with it at full extension. So it's up to how much you want to spend, really, Jeff. Given the choice and given £5,000, I'd have a 2.8 400 mil lens, but given the fact that I couldn't afford that, I bought the £2,000 lens instead.
Alex, even though you're a Nikon user.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I'd say is when you use a Nikon, because of the low light, you can
get away with slight inferior is the terrible word to use, but you're more likely to be able to get away with a 5.6 lens because of you can put the ISO up very, very high and not get so much graining. But that's still not gonna necessarily, one of the nice things about using a lens such as Ewan's is when things are moving fast, etc., you can get all the settings right. You can keep it at maybe an 800 ISO. You'll get the picture, you'll get the depth, you'll get everything you want with it. But, the thing is, there is a compromise. You need to have a compromise. Unless you're doing this for a living, you possibly wouldn't go out and buy that sort of camera or that sort of lens. Again, as Ewan says, Sigma do lenses that, shall we say, are more reasonably priced. You do get Tamron, but look in the second-hand market. There is a good possibility that you'll find a compromised lens slightly better than you'd necessarily want to spend on a Canon. But if you've got a second-hand Sigma or Tamron, some of them are quite high-end lenses, and if you can find a second-hand one, you might find that that will do the job for you. But there's no really cheap way of doing that well. The lens is what you need.
I think the other thing to think of as well is the speed of the autofocus. I mean, I've got to the stage now where my eyesight's so bloody bad, I can't manually focus to any high degree of detail at super speeds. I was never brilliant at it anyway. So I rely on the autofocus on that lens an awful lot. So I'm taking my focus shooting constantly with it. If you've got a lens that comes through from Sigma that's only cost you, say up to £500, in terms of autofocus, that could be very, very kludgy and very, very difficult to get a decent response out of, unless it's nearly at the focal length already. So you'd probably end up boosting it manually and then letting it take over for which is going to give you a real problem. I think the thing to do is get yourself a decent quality camera, and with a Mark II, you're going to get a very big picture. Get yourself a lens that will respond rapidly, and don't mind if you're just that little bit further away, because you've got cropping later on and the quality will still be there. But when you get into the high ISOs, just watch out for the grain. I mean, I know the 5D Mark II is not bad, but it's certainly not up to the quality of Nikon and even some of the Nikon stuff that I've seen. And also then look out for where you're outputting the photo. If you want one to make into posters, then it's probably not going to be good enough quality. But if you want something that's going to be a 2-inch across in the local rag, it's perfectly fine. Go up to the high ISOs. It doesn't make any difference then at that point.
Just as a tip, a photographic tip. I mean, not for years.
Really, on this show, photographic tip. Go on.
Strange.
No. Yeah. I've done football, and I've only ever done rugby once. But one of the things I found with football and through trial and error is, for instance, if you want to get a defender heading away, a goal kick, etc., etc. Now, you can see that ball in the air. You know roughly where you think that ball's going to come down. Give yourself a second and be ready for the shot. Don't try and track the ball in the air to where the defender's going to head it out. Take a guess. Look at, all right, that defender's going up for the ball. Focus on the defender. Get that 1 second head start and be prepared to then press the shutter. Don't try tracking the ball. Look for the shot you want and wait for that shot to come into focus, and you will get far, far superior shots doing it that way than trying to track the ball and taking a picture.
I've never shot football because I'm following the ball, you see, with rugby, so that's a really good tip.
Yeah, it does make a big difference, especially for things. I mean, I photograph cricket quite often, and what I do is I look with, I'm ready focused on the batsman. Yeah. I've got my shot set up, everything. I'm not looking in the back of the camera at that point. I've got a remote called. I'm watching the bowler deliver. I watch one or two shots. I get the timing right. The third ball, I'm ready. I'm pressing the button. I'm actually watching the game, not through the camera anymore. I'm watching the bowler. I've got my timing. I've pressed the button. I've got the ball hitting the bat. Brilliant shot. But it's all to do with having it prepared and working out the timing before. It's the same as playing the game. I've played cricket against people so fast that I haven't got time to watch the ball out of their hand and watch the ball bounce, etc. I've had to decide what shot I'm playing before the ball leaves his hand. And it's the same thing when you're taking the picture. Know what
you just got to practice.
Yeah.
Just practice the shot. Know the game. Practice the shot. Yeah, exactly. Work it out.
Have the shot set up and wait for the moment to get into your shot, and you'll get a far better shot for that reason.
Sweet. Sweet deal. Last question, guys. This is probably from Barry Gibb of the Bee Gees, but it says Barry Wood anyways. I have one simple question. I obviously know what I do already, but when I want to clean off my compact flashcard, should I format or should I erase images? Does it make a difference? Actually, a very good question. I'm kind of curious, too.
I would say if you're worried about recoverability in case you erase with by error, then I would always erase and get into a habit of erasing rather than formatting. Once you've formatted your shot or formatted your disc, then it becomes a little bit more difficult to get your images back if you've made a mistake. And what we're talking about here is like an automatic response. So if you're regularly formatting, you'll be into the habit of the number of button presses and mouse wheel rolls, if you like, on your camera to get to that position and format and go. So if you are working on autopilot, you could end up formatting when you meant to erase, or you could end up formatting when you wanted to do something else because the routine takes over. And then at that point, you stood there with horror on your face thinking, holy crap, what have I done? With erase, I think you've got more likelihood of getting your images back. I'm not a great expert on this, so I'm not going to pontificate for too long. But my understanding is if you format, the next picture you take will take off one of the abilities to recover the previous image. So you can recover one set of images from a formatted card, but every photo you take, that removes one of the images that you can recover. Now, whether that's the same on delete or not, I don't think so, but it might be. I might be wrong. Carrie Holtz would be a good one to ask on this, actually.
Actually, I might actually have an idea here, too, to be honest.
Ooh.
I actually might. I do know that if you want to prolong, usually with like USBs or flashcards or these kind of things, if your thing is full, you don't need it anymore, it is best to format it. It prolongs the life of the card instead of just erasing, because it's all cached. It kind of has a cached memory somewhat, like a hard drive in a computer. So if you really want to start clean and start from scratch, format is always best.
Yeah, and one of the things with erases, you do leave gaps. It's like on a hard drive where you need to defragment it. You will end up with a fragmented card. Now, what I do, and it's purely through routine again, as Ewan says, is I always format, but I have four or five cards, and I never ever format a card. When I'm finished, I go to the next card, and then I go to the next card, and then when I want the first card again, I then format that card. So the pictures on that card might be 2 months old. And I always back up every single card. As soon as I get through work, it goes onto a backup. It's done. I work on it. I always keep the originals. I quite often keep the raw files, and then I throw away all the stuff I didn't use. So I can go back about 5 years. With the cost of storage, I can go back more than 5 years and get nearly every single shot I've ever taken work-wise in the last 5 years. I do that because I can charge again for, you know, giving them the images if they want something I shot 3 years ago. Obviously, I don't charge them the full amount, but I charge them, getting it a back fee, because sometimes it does take me quite a while to find them. But what I do is I always format. I never delete, but I have more than one card. And if you do it that way, you fill up your camera, you go to the next card, and then you only format the card when you have to go back in the cycle. So that will be 3 or 4 months old. And if you've got, and you're, you know, doing it just for a hobby, the chances are it could be 6 months ago you last used that card. So your worries of needing it back, if you haven't backed it up after 6 months, well, I'm afraid it's your own fault. But that's the way I do it, and it's just a routine that I've done over the years, and it's always served me well.
I've got
hopefully that answers. Go ahead, Ewan. Sorry,
I've got similar thing. I've got a red patch and a blue patch, and my red patch is clean cards. My blue patch is used cards, and I'll go through all of the clean cards before I then start reformatting the used cards.
So you do exactly the same thing.
It's a kind of similar thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Except I go through them faster because they're only 2 gig SSDs. But
yeah, well,
I've started using the compact flash an awful lot more since you made me get that, Alex, and it's probably one of the best things I've done this year. last year.
It does make a difference.
Yeah, I think I might get a couple more of those.
That doesn't lead us into our cheap thing, Ian. Speaking of which, have you guys came up with any?
I haven't thought of anything. I thought of one this week because I remember I built the flash unit last week, and I started thinking about what you could then do with it, because obviously I said, you know, tripod mount it and then put an extension cord on it or something like that, perhaps to you know, so you've got some maneuverability with it. But if you get the pasta jars, and there's a place over the road, a place called Newey's from me, which is like a pound shop, and in there they've got a pasta jar which is really elongated, but they do it in a smoked plastic, and you can just get the front of your gun in there. And I thought, if you got a long lens on and you wanted to move the flash and get the light out further down the tube before it then starts to go on the inverse square law and get dimmer, you could rubber band it to the top of your long lens, and that would give you the stability perhaps, or you could put a block of plastic in between and then rubber band it so that it gives you that ability. That was a thought, but it's not really a cheap thing. Just an extension of last week's cheap thingy.
Rubber bands are cheap, so.
The other thing that's really good as well, and I found this with this, is when you're trying to do the zoom, so you're going from, you know, 70 to 200 mil, you're going backwards and forwards on this ring, you can get things like sports tapes, or you can just get like a band, like a kid's scrunchy band, and put those on there, and it just makes it just that little bit bigger, so you get a little bit more fine on the turns for more delicacy, perhaps, but that's it.
Alex, have you got anything that doesn't require you removing your shirt?
Well, that's my favourite hobby, removing my shirt. No, not really, but there is a couple of things. First thing is just something I came up against again this week, and it's something I do all the time and always forget. Always keep some low-tack tape in your camera bag. You either need it to stick up backgrounds on people's walls where you don't want to rip off their wallpaper after you've taken it down, etc., etc. And another use, and I come across this more often than not these days, is depending on how many lenses you carry with you, you're quite often going to probably need to use a zoom lens of some sort. Now, zoom lenses are great when you're shooting horizontally. Now, quite often I need to shoot down on things to get different angles with different lighting, etc., etc., especially when they're objects. Zoom lenses aren't designed to look down on anything. The moment you look down on something with a zoom lens, you sit there and all of a sudden things start going out of focus a little bit, and then they start getting bigger and bigger and bigger because the sheer weight of the lens itself pulls itself to full zoom all the time. And you, with what I do, I tend to use fairly long exposures, so you can't literally hold the lens at the same time as you photograph to stop it moving. So a piece of tape, just put a little bit of tape around the edge of the lens, it stops it slipping. That doesn't slip the Canon?
No,
well, mine slip all the time.
It doesn't. There's no outward moving part, so it's one solid body all the way through, so there's no movement inside.
Yeah, but look at the length of your lenses to make that possible. I mean, I carry... Yeah,
I paid for the privilege, dude.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I carry, six lenses all the time?
Yeah.
And I have one lens at that size, which never comes out because I never use it. So I'd say...
And you carry it around all the time.
Beg your pardon?
And you carry it around all the time.
Exactly. I never use it. I carry it. No, I don't take it. I don't take it out.
Because you never know.
Dude, here's your cheap thingy. Take out lenses you don't friggin' use. There you go.
Yeah, the thing is, I don't know what I'm going to need when I get there. That's half the problem. But anyway, so a piece of tape. And the other thing, I already mentioned that the Bagel Tech have now got a Flickr page. Stream thingy. I think it would be a nice idea for Ewan, because of he's the man in the know.
Hey Ewan, it's a cheap thingy for you.
Well, we've got an idea which we'd like people to have a go at this month. We could all do a photograph representing this sort of thing, not for prizes, not for anything else, but just for the sheer joy of taking part and seeing what other people come up with. So if Ewan wouldn't mind, and he could just announce it, because I think a lot of people would be quite interested in taking part in this.
Well, number one, we've got the Bagel Tech photo group on Flickr, so if you join Flickr, then look for Bagel Tech photo, all one word, and you'll get the Flickr group come up. And I think we've got the address of flickr.com/groups/bagel. Bagel Tech Photo. Now, you join there. I think there's about 18 or 20 people are already in there. And post some images that you've taken, and people, you know, in the group will comment on them or offer advice maybe if you want some advice for it. The other thing, though, is I set an email discussion group out saying, how about we have a monthly assignment? Because one of the things that I suffer with is, and Alex will get this as well, is when you do this for a living, you stop taking photos for the love of it. And it's true. You're an Astra Golf Pro. You know, if you want to stop playing golf, go be a golf pro. It's exactly the same problem. So I never get to sit and think about acting or creating. I always just go and take pictures of bits of equipment, or, you know, crap here, crap there, someone's portrait, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's crap there. It is. Most of what I shoot is utter rubbish. It's a picture of a box. It's a box going past on a conveyor. It's a conveying system. It looks nice, don't get me wrong, but there's no creativity in it. So I don't do it for the love of it anymore. And the other day, I just thought, right, I'm getting my camera out and I'm going to shoot some bubbles in the garden. And I went and shot a whole pile of bubbles. And then it made me realise, well, I should post these on a Flickr site. So I posted them on a Flickr site, created one for Bagel Tech Photo. And then I thought, well, what about if other people wanted to do this or comment on it? So we'll have a group. So I created the group. So every month we're going to do an assignment. May's assignment, and this is Alex's suggestion, is your reinterpretation of classic album covers. It came because Aaron Clayton said yes to it and didn't make a suggestion as to what to do. And his icon is Dark Side of the Moon, Pink Floyd. Or a slight abbreviation that'll change that. So there you go. You've got to shoot your interpretation of a classic album cover. It can be serious, it can be humorous, it can be a replication. It's up to you. You can do whatever you want with it in Photoshop, but you just post it up, one image per person, and there's no prizes. Just a bit of fun. And then someone can pick next month.
There you go. I think it could be good fun.
Should be.
Yeah, I think so too. I've already got an idea actually for myself.
There you go. Do it. See if you can do it with an iPhone as well. There's the creativity of it.
I am going to do it with an iPhone because it's my only choice.
Well, earlier on this week, I was wondering if I could possibly use an iPhone for work because that was almost my only choice.
Well, nice, cool thingies, guy. It was kind of a MacGyver thing. We got some rubber bands, some tape. All we need is the paper clips now, and we're set to go. So if you guys, we do the questions, as you heard. So if you guys want to get your questions, it's bageltechphoto@gmail.com, and we'll answer them every week, regardless if you're from Buckinghamshire or the Bee Gees. We will get your questions here on the air for you. Before I get into where we can get a hold of you guys, I got to let everybody know, of course, about our sponsor, UK2.net. They're keeping the network afloat. With the amount of terabyte that we went through this month, I don't even want to know. So much thanks to UK2.net. Go to bageltechnews.com. Click their click through. If you're looking for some great, reliable web hosting, you need to check them out. Great prices over there. Just please use our click through. That way they know we are definitely sending you. And also, Ewan, I want to mention a good friend of the network, which is Don McAllister, who does the Mac Show with us, who's given that 50% off the screencasts online. That's great Mac tutorials. He's been doing it for as long as I can remember. And it is really great of Don to do that. So if you're looking for really great tutorials on your Mac, the only place you need to go is Don McAllister, and you can put it through their screencast online. 50% off for Bagel Tech News listeners, which is really, really cool of them. So, anything to add, Ewan? Is there any promos or anything else that we know?
No, we've still got the UK2. No, we've still got the VPS server. So, if you go to UK2 and you get a VPS server, if you use the offer code Bagel Tech, then you're going to get 1 month off. Your first 12 months. And also, if you go for the co-location services and use the offer code Bagel Tech, you'll get a free iPad 2 and a month off your first use of co-location. So,
very good deal. So right there is also a pretty good deal.
They're also bringing on 3 extra nodes on our server next week to deal with the extra data that we've shipped this month. So I don't think anyone has had any problems with stuttering or anything like that, or trouble getting the podcast down, so, which, you know, is testament. But we've done 3 terabytes this month now total.
It's unbelievable. Well, guys, we're at this time of the show. Where can we get a hold of you? We'll start with you, Alex. Where can people get a hold of you?
Well, they can get hold of me at alexgfox at twittery thingy.
And you can get hold of me on at Ewan Rankin, EwenRankin, or you can go to ewanrankin.co.uk, the website that needs an awful lot of work doing to it, and I haven't had time.
You'll get there.
I will. I'm going to do some screencasts. I've got some screencasting software now. So I'm going to do some Photoshop tutorials, just simple stuff.
Oh, I'll make sure I watch them then.
Me too.
I think you'll manage, Alex.
Hopefully you'll have some iPhone 4 tutorials. Please.
Point, click, great.
We will do the same thing next week, minus the whole royal family hanging over our heads. So I hope you will join us. We will be back next week, 11 a.m. UK time, for the Bagel Tech Photo Show. If you're watching us right now live, stay tuned for the Mac Show. It's at 1 p.m., followed by the Bagel Tech Big Show tonight at 10 p.m. Don't miss it. Bagel Broadcast Friday will continue, and we will see you next week. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of Bagel Tech Photo. Bye-bye.
Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.